Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Hello and a very warm welcome from me, your hostess, Goblin Queen, celebrating 2 years of making these videos. And what better way than to do another video reading goblin stories? Tonight, we will be reading firsthand stories of people coming across goblins, real goblins. I've got stories from Reddit, your ghost stories, and more. Let's get started. This first story comes from the Paranormal subreddit, and it was submitted by QB. I'm retelling a story I bring up to friends and family on those spooky occasions, and I honestly don't know if I even believe what I saw. I don't see these stories pop up on these forums much. I'm pretty sure I saw a house goblin, kind of like the one in Harry Potter, but years before that even existed. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I was home alone from 3 to 5 p.m. I'd come home from school and try to watch movies or play games. We had a modest apartment. As you walked in, you'd be in a living room slash dining area, with a kitchen on the left and on the right, a hallway that led to 3 bedrooms and a small bathroom. At the end of the hallway was my parents' bedroom. I remember clearly that it was the end of the school year, maybe around mid-June. I walked home and went into the apartment and grabbed a snack. In the living room, I'm looking at the 2 DVDs my dad rented from Blockbuster. I open up the DVD to load up The Green Mile. It's beautiful outside, sunny as can be, and all of a sudden, out from the hallway, a little man, no bigger than 1.5 feet, runs out and freezes, and we look at each other. I can't remember its facial features very well, but it's got dark tan skin and ragged hair. It sees me and bolts back down the hallway. My heart sank when I saw it, and as big as a chicken as I was, I ran after it. But there was nowhere for it to go, and I still didn't catch up to it. It was a small apartment, and it was just gone. I looked for a bit, but felt extremely unsettled, so I skipped the movie and went out. I never saw the thing again. Has anyone else ever seen something like it? Are these stories even common in cities? They do get some responses. We'll get to those in just 1 second. They mention at the beginning of their story that they don't see too many of these stories come up often, and I can only assume they mean stories containing goblins. I'm actually amazed at how many I've found. This is part 4, after all. Goblin sightings aren't as rare as I once thought. Let's go over some details the OP gives in the comments. They reiterate that this was in the middle of the day, right after they got out of school, and they were wide awake, so this couldn't have been some kind of sleep or nap-related hallucination or dream. They say, he came in from the hallway and kind of stopped dead in his tracks, because he was less than 4 feet away from me and looked me pretty much square in the eyes. I saw it turn around and run back from wherever it came. They said that they felt panicked and dumbfounded, and that they had a, quote, sinking pit in their stomach feeling when they saw it. But they didn't feel that the creature was evil. They said it didn't do anything, just got caught. It definitely didn't want to be seen, as much as I didn't want to see him. Hope he didn't get punished for being caught. They also mentioned that this is the only supernatural experience they've had. Quote, I've had 0 sightings. No ghosts or UFOs or anything. As far as other people's experiences in the comments, Zachary says, I had a situation not in the hallway, but in the kitchen. I can't put my finger on the time, but sometime between 1 and 4 a.m. I was about to go into the kitchen. It was pitch black, except the hallway light was on. I saw something, thinking it was my dog. Then my eyes adjusted to the dark, and I saw a goblin like Dobby in Harry Potter mixed with a garden gnome. We both just looked at each other, but I could see in his eyes he did not expect to see me. His eyes were wide open, as if in a panicked state of mind, and I just looked away, hoping what I just saw was my imagination, but knowing full well it wasn't. Tanya says, "Oh my god, I've seen one of these when I was like 4 or 5. I woke up in the middle of the night, probably around 11 p.m. because the hallway lights were still on, and I saw this little goblin-like thing peering from behind the doorway." We've definitely come across some little goblins peeking from around bedroom doors at night in past videos. I think I remember one where someone described a group of them with their heads all stacked on top of each other looking around the door. It sounds really cute in description when you're reading the description of someone's story, but I'm sure any of these cases happening in real life is very shocking and in a lot of cases frightening. I actually think that's the only Reddit story I have tonight. Next, let's read a couple from the fairy census. All of these are going to be from the first fairy census. And if you want to read the full fairy census, it is available for free to download as a PDF, or you can buy physical copies, but I will have links in my source list as to where you can download it if you want. And I must say, I also encourage anyone who has had a fairy experience to consider submitting it anonymously. I'll have a link to that in the description. So this story took place in Ireland, County Cork, and the witness was female. They were between the ages of 51 and 60 at the time this happened. It was sometime between 2000 and 2010, in the year 2000 or 2010, and the time was between 9 p.m. and 12 a.m. It's not really written in a narrative form, so we will pick it apart and dissect it after reading it. Full moonlight, Samhain Eve, little goblin-y type men running in and out of the bushes, giggling, tumbling, and scurrying around the garden, house by side of the burren, yew lined at side, orchard at end. They looked like little men, about 2 feet tall, very dark-skinned, swarthy, with big noses, ragged clothes. I heard streams of music, which was hypnotic, but made me feel sick. We had a solid-type fog all day, and a farmer had said, "Pooka, come down in the mist." I just knew it was a fairy. My paternal grandmother was Irish, and when I went to live in Ireland in 2007, I felt I had gone home. I think fairies are ancestral voices. I have always felt something, and have seen things all my life. I learned when going to school to keep quiet. I can't explain my experience. I just am thankful for it. All right, so a lot of interesting details to take in, all packed in there. It was a full moon. It was Samhain, or Halloween, Eve. Samhain had a great significance in rural Ireland as a harvest festival and was really like the Irish Christmas, just in how important and the scale on which it was celebrated, even though the modern Christian calendar equivalent is known as Halloween. But as many know, the veil is alleged to be thin on Halloween. The barriers between our earthly plane and the other worlds of the dead and the fairies come away, and many Irish people would say that the fairies are more active on Halloween. A quote from a local man in the book The Hallowed Eve, Dimensions of Culture in a Calendar Festival in Northern Ireland, says, "The fairies or little people are supposed to be more lively at this time of year than at any other. They are supposed to send out lights from their various wraths and forts, and stories are told of folks who went out on messages and were led astray by the lights. People, as far as possible, avoid going out alone on Halloween night for this very reason." So the witness from the fairy census says her house was by the side of the burren, which is a 200-square-mile rocky landscape of thick layers of sedimentary rocks, primarily limestone, that made up a seafloor millions of years ago. It butts up against the North Atlantic Ocean where waves crash up against the imposing cliffs. It is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful. And not only that, the burren is littered with ruins. The remnants of ancient ring forts and megalithic tombs crowd rocky hills, and carbon dating of animal bones found in nearby caves show evidence of hunting from 33,000 years ago. So, not only is there a ton of human history in the area, but undoubtedly also lots of magic. They also mentioned that they have a line of yew trees at the side of their house, and yew trees are very highly regarded and revered in Celtic folklore. They're often planted in churchyards around gravestones, where they act as guardians over the dead. Yew trees were believed to have magical qualities, and the druids often used yew wood for their wand making. Next, we'll address this bit. We had a solid type of fog all day, and a farmer had said, "Pooka, come down in the mist." Now, a pooka is a type of solitary fairy, and therefore, an evil one, or at least a dangerous one. They can take many different forms, from a goatman-like creature to an eagle large enough to carry a man on its back. Kind of reminds me of that scene from The Hobbit. The description from Brian Froud and Alan Lee's classic book Fairies reads as such. The pooka is an Irish goblin with a variety of rough, beast-like forms. He appears sometimes as a dog or a horse, or even a bull, but he is generally jet black with blazing eyes. As a seemingly friendly, shaggy, sway-backed pony, Pooka offers the unwary traveler a welcome lift, but once astride he is taken for a wild and terrifying gallop across the wettest and most thorny country, eventually to be dumped headlong into the mire or deposited in a ditch. The chuckle is that of the pooka as he gallops away. It's interesting that she said she thinks fairies are ancestral voices, and she has an ancestral connection to Ireland, which she felt deeply when she moved there. That was just something I noticed. And it also sounds like she has the sight, or the ability to see the other world, as she confesses at the end of her account that she has always felt and seen things that she can't explain. So, yeah, there was a lot to unpack in that brief goblin sighting, but lots of interesting stuff. So, let's read another account from the fairy census. This one took place in New Zealand. The witness was female. This took place in the 1990s, and the time was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. I was 15 years old. I woke up and a little green man, or being, was standing by my bed, looking at me. It sort of looked like a gremlin or an imp. It had khaki green skin, bald, pointed ears, a small snub nose, wrinkly, weathered skin, like an elderly man who has seen a lot of sun, about a foot and a half tall and stocky. I am 100% sure I was fully awake. I looked at him for a bit, stunned. He didn't look mean, more curious. Then he looked like he was going to walk closer to me. I exclaimed, "What the fuck is that?" and threw my pillow at it. Then, after a few moments, I peeked under the pillow, and nothing was there. This was in my basement bedroom. I fled upstairs and slept in my sister's room that night. Slept upstairs for a week or two after the incident. Everyone laughed at me and said I was dreaming, but to this day I can remember it totally and was wide awake. I didn't think it looked like an alien, but who knows? More like a tiny troll thing. The area that the house was built on was a reclaimed swamp. I feel kind of bad for the little goblin having the pillow thrown at it, but I suppose I understand her reaction. When she says at the end that she didn't think it looked like an alien, but who knows, that's probably in reference to a question that is on the fairy census survey, if you're filling out for an experience, that says, what makes you think that this was a fairy experience and not something else, like an alien or a ghost, etc. So, she's probably responding to that, saying that she didn't think it looked like an alien. So, who knows indeed. In the next story, back by popular demand, is the Duende. This story took place in Peru. I have a 30-year-old friend who tells how, when he was 12 or 13 years of age, in 1999 or 2000, he saw in Peru something from the other side, what is known as a Duende. He described it as a creature that was about 50 or 60 centimeters tall, with a hat, a wrinkled face, and with a not particularly thick beard. This creature, my friend told me, he saw on the patio of his house when he was coming back from school around 1 and 2 p.m. My friend remained intrigued by the experience. His sister, who was younger than him and who is now 23, claimed to have seen the duende some days later. My friend says that when he thought about warning others that there was an intruder, the duende disappeared. Many years later, while commenting on this case, people told my friend that there's a type of duende in Peru that lives around the fig trees. This was interesting, as there was a fig tree in the patio. My friend is trustworthy and does not lie. He subsequently learned that fig trees attract supernatural beings, and the place had a great fig tree. My friend rapidly decided that he had seen a duende, as the creature has a small stature, was human-like, and well-shaped. In his village, there are lots of stories about these beings. Once again, trees play a part in fairy or goblin lore. Earlier it was yew trees, now it's fig trees. And different trees in different cultures are believed to have ties to fairies. I found an article from a Peruvian website called Cusco Eats that mentioned a local folktale that had tied fairies to fig trees. The author of the article, David Knowlton, writes, "It has been said that fairies, or duendes, live in fig trees and come out during the night to play with and tease people in any place that is close to one of these trees." Let me read a bit more from this article, as it sheds some light on the cultural beliefs of duende in Peru. People tell many stories about duendes, a general word for us to describe goblins, elves, trolls, and such. They are both real and imaginative. Other people insist they have seen duendes, and that they had unforgettable experiences. They say that when a child is born, it has a fairy, or duende, who comes and plays with it. You may have asked many times, "Who is my child talking with?" or "Why does she laugh so much when she was alone?" It is said that these duendes are delightful personages who play and laugh along with your children, but as they get bigger, they forget about all of this that they have experienced. Some people insist that the duendes are bad and bother the children, making them uncomfortable when they sleep or take a siesta. My mother would say that the duendes bring out their treasures to polish them in the light of the sun. Who has never had the experience of taking a stroll and then sitting in some park, only to find some old coins that are dirty and tarnished? So, depending on the person, and probably depending on the experience as well, duende can be seen as friendly and playful, or mischievous and bothersome. The final statement in this report from the Fairy Census mentions a different type of duende called a muki. Quote, "The creature was very possibly some type of duende from a fig tree, possibly a muki, which is the Peruvian duende of this type." From what I found, a muki is a regional Peruvian example of a type of goblin that inhabits mines, much like a knocker or a tommyknocker, blue cap, or another of the dozen or so examples of fey beings that exist in different cultures by different names. So, we're going to move on from the fairy census for now, but I highly encourage seeking it out if you are interested. So far, there have been 1,000 reports of fairy sightings and encounters documented in the 2 fairy census available at this point, spearheaded and curated, of course, by Dr. Simon Young. So I mentioned earlier that they are available to read and download for free, and I do also have videos dedicated to reading accounts from the fairy census. So you can look for a playlist, my fairies playlist, if you want to hear more of that. More videos dedicated solely to the fairy census. Next, I just want to read a quick little excerpt from Marie Trevelyan's book Folklore and Folk Stories of Wales concerning a haunted place in rural Carmarthenshire called the Goblin Stone. And when I say I'm going to read a quick little excerpt, actually, my dear friend James Gracie is going to read it for us. So, let's have a listen.
The Goblin Stone of Cranwell Gaio occupied a spot which few people care to pass at night. In the 17th century, a young man who had gone far in search of work came in the twilight to a large stone surrounded with grass. The place looked tempting for a night's resting place. After making a good but simple supper, the traveller placed his bundle containing clothes on the grass in shelter of the stone. For a time, he slept soundly, But about midnight, he was awakened by somebody pinching his arms and ears and pricking his nose. He got up and, looking around in the starlight, saw a goblin sitting on the stone, with many others around him. The man tried to run away, but the master goblin would not permit him, and, at his command, his minions interlaced their grotesque arms around him and prevented him moving. They tweaked his ears and nose, pinched him, gave him pokes in his ribs, and tormented him all through the night in every conceivable manner. He sat down to rest and wait for the dawn, and in the meantime, the goblin screamed and laughed and shrieked in his ears until he was nearly mad. When the first streak of morning light appeared, the goblins vanished. The stranger got up in the dawn, and when he went onward he met some workmen, to whom he related his adventure. They said he had slept under the Goblin Stone.
Thank you, James, for lending your voice to that beautiful reading. If you want to hear more from James, he does pop up throughout my videos doing some readings, but he's most heavily featured in a reading we did of a Shirley Jackson short story called The Man in the Woods. And I'm also going to put a link in the description of the video to his blog, where he writes reviews of some very interesting and generally obscure independent horror films. So unfortunately, I couldn't find any other information on the Goblin Stone, but that is just a fabulous little story. I'm currently reading through this book that it's from, the Welsh Folklore and Folktales, which is just an incredible book. Oh, I absolutely love it. It's a treasure. For the next batch of tales, we are going to read from your ghost stories. This next story was submitted by Stormy Girl PDX. It took place in the Philippines, and it's called Duende. I was born and raised in the Philippines. We moved to the U.S. when I was 11 years old. This story took place in the Philippines when I was 7 years old. I can recall some of the stuff that happened to me, but not to the fullest. My uncle retold the story to me again later on, when I got a little older. And then, from time to time when we have family gatherings, someone in my family would retell the story again, as it was a bit mind-boggling. The story started when my dad and I went to visit his sister, my aunt and my cousins, in the province. My aunt has 3 children. One is my age, and the other 2 are a couple of years older than I was. When we got to their house, I remember my aunt and cousins came running out of the house to greet us with such joy and excitement. After the initial visiting, my cousins and I went outside to play hide and seek. My older cousin was the seeker, while everyone else hid. My aunt's house was out in the woods. Her house was surrounded by mountains and trees after trees and tall grasses. There's this belief in the Philippines that most duendes live in the forest or a place where there's lots of trees. And if you cross their path without saying tabi tabi po nuno, meaning pardon or excuse me, little people, they will cast a bad spell on you. It all depends on the duende you come across. Some are nice and some are evil. If you cross an evil duende, then they can cast a death wish on you. Some can give you warts all over your body and make you ugly and hideous, so people will be disgusted of you and not want to be around you. As I said, my cousin was the seeker and everyone hid. I wanted to hide where my cousins couldn't find me, so I saw this very big tree, what seemed to be like a 100-year-old tree. Around it, I found a little hole, and that's where I hid. Without thinking and forgetting what my elders told me about duendes, I forgot to say what we're supposed to say and hid for a long time in the tree. After what seemed to be forever hiding, I came out of the hole and went back to where my cousins were. They said that they had given up looking for me since they didn't find me anywhere. That evening before dinner, I started not feeling too good. I remember the shivers, the many trips to the bathroom vomiting, and after that I can honestly say that I don't remember what else happened. But my dad and aunt told me that I was practically in a coma for 3 days. They said that in some cases, I was hallucinating. I would sweat heavily, laugh, cry, and sometimes I would talk to someone in front of me as if someone was there. But there was no one there. They even took me to a local hospital, but the doctors couldn't tell my family what was wrong with me. So my aunt asked her kids what we did outside. My cousins told my dad and aunt that all we did was play hide and seek. They said that I was gone a long time, that they couldn't find where I hid. My dad and aunt then knew that maybe I was a victim of an evil duende. They took me to a witch doctor to find out what was wrong with me. As my dad explained to me, he said that as soon as they brought me inside the witch doctor's house, they knew that something evil was in my presence. The witch doctor lit a candle, took a tub, and poured about an inch or two of water in it. Then she mixed a few drops of some special plant oil with the water. While chanting in some weird language, she took the lit candle and poured the melted wax into the tub with the water and oil. As she poured the wax, a figure started to form. My uncle said that the melted wax on the water formed a huge tree with a hole. Inside the hole was a human, which was supposed to be me, and around me were about 4 or 5 duendes. Some were just standing there staring at me, and some looked like they were throwing something at me. So, the witch doctor had advised my family to take me back where that big tree was, and to say, "Tabby, tabby, po, nuno," and bring some fruits for offerings. That same day, my dad and aunts took me to the tree and excused me from any wrongdoings and brought with them plenty of fruits. All I remember was waking up the next day without any recollection of what had happened to me. So, in my first video dedicated to goblin stories, we covered the Nuno Sapunso, or the Filipino Duende. Their nature is basically the same as a fae being in any other culture. You know, unpredictable. So it's advised to say tabby tabby po when walking through the forest in case you accidentally tread on one of these little people who are invisible to the human eye. If you don't, you could get sick, just as Stormy Girl did in her story. And no peeing on anthills. The duende will do some very nasty things to you if you pee on anthills. A lot of people share their insights and experiences regarding duende in the comments, so let's take a look at some of those now. Of course, we must take note that trees come up once again in relation to goblins, and they do in this comment as well. Miles says, "Our neighborhood had the same experience as you, but it is quite different from your Sawe Sawe, which is the name for the illness or curse inflicted by duendes. We live in a compound in Zamboanga, and huge trees, or bilete, stood everywhere. One afternoon around 5 p.m., there was a boy who was playing around a huge tree with his sister. Hours later, the boy went missing, and some of the neighbors volunteered to look for the missing boy. The search went for hours, and they almost lost their hope in finding the boy. Then, one of them saw the little boy was lying on the ground, facing the empty sky, with his eyes wide open. The weird thing was all of them looked at that spot several times, but no one saw him, and the one who found him didn't use a flashlight, but a candle. The elders told us that the duende are playing with the boy. I'm not sure if the duende really did something with that boy, but one thing for sure is that they live with us in our compound." So in the Philippines, bilete trees, which can grow to be enormous and are distinctly beautiful, definitely look up a picture of them if you're not familiar. These trees are said to be the homes of various supernatural beings, such as duende. These trees are the center of much superstition and are advised not to be cut down without asking permission, or first reciting a phrase directed at the unseen beings who might dwell within. Which reminds me of Irish folklore. There are certain trees that you aren't supposed to cut down because they're fairy trees. I'm pretty sure it's thorn trees. Bilete trees also play a huge part in the practice of a babaylan, or Filipino shamans. Another comment by Tony says, "When I was little, I remember my mom telling me about her encounter with the duendes. The story sounds very similar to the one posted, but nothing bad happened. She said when she was very young, she was playing in the woods. She was deep in, a ways from her home. She ran into these little people. She must have befriended them, because she said that they took her to their home, which was a big tree. She stayed with them for most of the day, leading into the evening. She said that they fed her, though I don't recall what they gave her to eat. Maybe fruit. It got late, and she could hear her mother calling her name, looking for her. She told her new friends that she had to go, and said her goodbyes to them. My grandma started to really worry that she wouldn't find her. Then my mom appeared from out of nowhere, and ran to my grandma. She asked her, 'Where have you been? I've been looking all over for you.' She told Grandma where she was and who she was with. She then took Mom home immediately. I'm not sure if she ever saw the duendes again. That was the only story she told me of them. There seemed to be a lot of experiences with Duende and the Filipino culture, similar to Hispanic culture. It's very, very interesting to me. But let's move away from Duendes for now. Let's read another story. This one is from North Carolina and was posted by Spocky. It's called The Little Black Imp. This story takes place when I was maybe 4 years old. I was raised by my paternal grandmother, my great aunt, and her daughter, Lena. Growing up in that old cotton mill house, I didn't have a room of my own, but would take turns sleeping with the three adults. This happened one summer night when I was sleeping in my cousin Lena's room, which we also called the back room. The rest of the house was in a square shape, with four rooms that opened directly into each other, with no hallway between. The back room was an extra half room that opened off the living room and was long and narrow. Apparently, it had been added onto the house later. There was one big window to the left of the bed, and beside it was a wardrobe. This particular night was warm, so the window was up, but it had a screen on it. Lying there in the dim light of the street lamp, I heard a rustling sound outside my window. I looked and saw it coming through the window. Right through the closed screen, the figure of a little black imp, about 12 inches tall. I could not make out any features because of the dim light, but I could plainly see the outline of a pointed hat on its head. This little figure climbed through the window, walked back and forth for a while on the floor at the foot of the bed, then disappeared right through the closed wardrobe door. I never saw it again, but I saw plenty of other unusual things in that old house. I suspect that wardrobe might have been the site of some sort of portal. Hey man, Narnia might not be the only story in which a wardrobe acts as a portal. I actually have a few stories saved involving wardrobes. I'm hoping to make that its own subject one day. Let's read this comment from Blaue Engel. I saw something similar when I was in Germany. It was about that height, only it was furry and no hat. It had tufted ears like those of a long-haired cat, but its eyes had whites and it walked like a monkey, alternating between walking on all fours and on its hind legs. It had sharp canine teeth as well. It had a long tail that was dark brown, but not furry like its body. Its fur was black, but in the sun it seemed like a chocolate brown color. It was coming towards me through an open window with a very intense gaze, but when the church rang its bells, it looked thwarted and made a hasty escape through the window. I thought I had lost my mind when I saw this thing. Was this what you saw? The OP never replied, but from their story, it doesn't sound like they had as many details of the creature they saw as Blaue Engel did. And these are some very interesting details. I found it fascinating that the creature seemed to flee at the sound of church bells. There is folklore and superstition that the sound of bells is supposed to protect you from fairies or disperse fairies and other supernatural beings. So the next story takes place in Australia. It was submitted by Orchestrated, and it's called Creature in the Kitchen. I live in Geelong, Australia, and this sighting occurred a couple years ago. I don't live in a very big house, so my bedroom is really close to the kitchen. I always slept with my door open back when I was 15, 16 years old. My parents' bedroom is also close to the kitchen, which is where this creature was standing. The time was around 3:30 a.m. I remember waking up and I was facing my wall, with my back towards the kitchen. I rolled over to my other side, and as soon as I did, my eyes adjusted to the light in the kitchen. Then they fixated on the door, which led to where my parents' room was. This is when I spotted the creature. It wasn't very big, measuring around 80 centimeters. It resembled a goblin or gremlin. I could not tell for sure what it was. It was slightly dark, but bright enough for me to get a rough figure. It had very distinct ears, which is what gave it away. At the time, I couldn't move, probably because I was so scared. Me and this creature exchanged looks for about a minute. It was just peeking around the side of the door, looking at me, standing very still. All I did was look, because I was afraid that if I moved, it would run off or attack me. After watching it for some time, paralyzed, I quickly rolled back over to face the wall. I turned back to see if it was still watching me, but it had disappeared. The creature has never returned since then. The witness elaborates in the comments that the distinct ears looked, quote, somewhat like pig's ears. The face was slightly curved as well. Someone in the comments asks if they had any other strange things happen in the house prior or after seeing this little creature. And the response Orchestrated gives is very interesting. They say, my parents have told me that when I was a toddler, they think I was possessed. My mom told me that I would wake up every night at exactly 12:20 a.m., get up and scream and not act like a human being. She said that this continued for 3 to 4 months, and they said they were going to take me to a psychiatrist, but my mom's mom said to take me to a witch first, so she did. My mom said to me that the witch gave her a pouch with something in it, which had no smell to it. It was meant to be placed under my pillow at night, and she said that all of this nonsense would stop, which it did. The witch also said no one is to open the pouch, ever. I asked my parents about the pouch, but they said they are never going to tell me where they have hidden it. I've looked through the whole house for it, but still haven't found it. I still don't believe my parents to this day. I'm not sure if that is at all related to their goblin sighting they had as a teenager, but I find it to be very interesting. It sounds like what I've heard called night terrors, and I remember my mom saying my sister had them when she was a child, that she would basically get up and scream in her sleep. But whatever they were, it seems that this witch pouch was effective in curing them. How intriguing. Our next story takes place in Canada. It was submitted by Marope, and it's called A Monster in My Room. The incident that I'm going to relate took place 10 years ago, but has been bothering me ever since. And when I found this site, I decided to share my story and see if anyone has any opinions. Of course, as it was an entire decade ago, this is by no means an urgent request for information, as the monster, or whatever it was, has not reappeared since. I suppose I'm just more curious than anything else, and want to know if anyone else has seen anything similar. What I'm going to do is describe the room and what I saw, and then explain why it couldn't have been a dream. I sleep in the same room as I did when I was 10, but the layout has since changed. When this story takes place, my bed was in the corner of the room, so the headboard was against one wall, and the right side was against the other. At the foot of my bed was an armoire, which was not pushed against the wall because there was an electrical outlet behind it, which my lamp plugged into. The armoire was maybe 4 or 5 inches away from the wall. The door to my room is in the corner farthest from the bed. Also, there is a street lamp right outside my window, so even at night, my room is never very dark. When I was a kid, I would never close my eyes while waiting to fall asleep. I don't really know why. I would lie in bed listening to books on tape and staring at the ceiling. But after what I saw that night when I was 10, I always keep my eyes tightly shut. The first thing that happened was I heard a soft creak and looked to see one of the doors of my armoire opening gently, not abruptly at all, and then it closed just as softly. At this point, I was not afraid. I was actually oddly calm, considering how nervous of a child I was. I remember thinking it must have been the wind, which makes no sense because even if the wind could have done that, my window was closed. Then I saw it. A monster, or creature, or something. I don't know. In the space between my armoire and the wall, I saw a face. It was green with red eyes, and horribly fat red lips. It had a very skinny body with long arms. The body was humanoid. Its head was very round and looked smooth. It did nothing for a moment, but then it gave me this terrible grin, and I bolted out of my room all the way to the basement where my father was working and told him. Of course, he couldn't find anything, told me it was just a nightmare, and made me go back to bed. I would be tempted to also believe it was just a dream, but there are 3 reasons I know it can't have been. Firstly, my vision was not terrible at that age, but I did need glasses, which I obviously didn't wear to bed. When I saw that thing, it was visible, but just a little bit blurry, and no dream I've ever had, no matter how realistic, has replicated my vision without glasses. Secondly, I never woke up. When I have a bad dream and I wake up from it, it takes me a few minutes to reorient myself, realize that it was a dream and that everything's okay. There was no transition like that. I saw the thing and ran. I never woke up. Thirdly and lastly, I mentioned that I fell asleep listening to audiobooks. Well, I continued to hear my audiobook playing smoothly through the whole event, not stopping or distorting like I know it would have in a dream. I have never read that book since. One of the Wayside School books, if you're interested or if it lends credence. After that, I never saw the thing again, although I had nightmares about it for the next year. If anyone has any ideas about this, I would love to hear them. Even if you think I'm crazy, that's a valid opinion too. I hope my account was clear, and thank you very much for reading. Very clear account. And, of course, I don't think the witness is crazy. So, this is so interesting. Not only do wardrobes come up again, we just talked about them, and how I've collected several stories now. It's a common thing that comes up. I mean, I guess it makes sense that there's closets, armoires, wardrobes, etc. They're in bedrooms, so it makes sense, I guess, you know, that they come up fairly often when it comes to stories of strange things seen in bedrooms. But I still think it's interesting. I love finding patterns no matter what. But I made a joke about Narnia earlier, but I mean, it is interesting. It is a doorway. I mean, it's the same with closets. Kids are scared of closets. It's something I'm going to look into. Anyway, it's very interesting that they came up again. But something very similar came up in my last video I did, reading stories from the fairy census. A man from Kent, England, shared a story of seeing a green man behind his wardrobe in the space between the wardrobe and the wall. And there wasn't really a lot of detail to the story, but this man didn't think it was creepy or anything either. They actually, I think, thought it was a nice protective presence. They got a nice feeling from it. But it's just interesting that these are so similar. It's another green man, tucked behind the wardrobe, between the wall and the wardrobe, which really isn't a very big space. I mean, they said in this story it was 4 or 5 inches from the wall. That's not enough space for a person to be. So there's something a little creepy and uncanny about it. I thought so in the last story, that story that I mentioned from the fairy census. I thought the same thing. There's something that really kind of gives me the creeps about thinking about something staring, a face staring out at you from between your wardrobe and your wall, because no one's supposed to fit there. So it's a little spooky to me. This is not related to fairies or anything at all, but them mentioning that when they were a kid, they would never close their eyes while waiting to fall asleep. That just made me remember that when I was a teenager, I would close my eyes when I was trying to sleep. But if I opened them for some reason, I thought that it totally, like, undid all the progress I was making towards sleep, as if there was, like, some kind of loading progress bar. As I kept my eyes closed, I was getting closer and closer to sleep. And if I opened them, I was back at the beginning. I don't know why I thought that. Yeah, I don't know. It just made me think about that. What do? Do you close your eyes as you're waiting to fall asleep? Do you just keep your eyes open until you pass out? And then also, totally unrelated to goblins or anything, I did think it was interesting. One of their arguments that this could not have been a dream was that when they saw the being, you know, their vision was a little blurry because they needed glasses at the time. And they've never had a dream that replicated their vision in real life, you know, where they need glasses. And I thought that was really interesting. It's something I never thought about because I can see fine without glasses. So I've just never thought about how people who have impaired vision, where they need glasses to see clearly, that in their dreams, their vision's fine without glasses. I guess it makes sense. You're not using your eyes in your dreams, but I still thought it was interesting. Dreams just interest me to no end. It's always been a huge, huge interest of mine. It's a whole other world. It is for me. It's definitely like a whole other world. So, that's all the stories from Your Ghost Stories I have. Next, this is kind of a one-off, but I found a possible Duende or Goblin story that was just submitted and posted to Phantoms and Monsters, which is a blog run by Fortean researcher and author Lon Strickler. It reads as such. My father and I used to take late-night walks due to his insomnia from shift work. Our neighborhood is considered very safe and ultimately was an urban neighborhood located in Santa Fe, New Mexico. One of the roads towards the back of the neighborhood was lined with thick forest for about a mile and a quarter deep, which made a circle back in itself. All of these walks are very dear memories of mine, except one, and it ended up being the last one. Along the road with the tree line, there was a single street light to illuminate a small plot of land that someone owned, but was very overgrown and ill-kept. It was very common for us to walk this road and to enjoy the sounds of the forest, the lack of illumination, and the ease of circling back. One ordinary night, as we were walking and making conversation, my father abruptly stopped, pulled me close, put a hand over my mouth, pulled me to a crouch, and pointed towards the single illuminated plot, roughly 100 yards away. At first, I didn't see anything and thought he was pulling my leg, but just as I began to protest his grasp, I saw a very small humanoid figure, roughly 3 feet in height, scrawny with long limbs, materialize out of the plot's brush line and cautiously take in its surroundings before signaling towards the brush. After a few seconds, two other small humanoid figures materialized as well. After a brief moment of what looked to be a discussion, all three made a dash for the forest tree line. Once this happened, my father picked me up, threw me over his shoulder, and made a break for our home, which was roughly a half mile back. Mind you, my father is 6'5", 220 pounds, and I was roughly 120 pounds at this time, and he never showed signs of slowing due to his fear and adrenaline. After this night, we never took late-night walks. He installed 4 bright motion detection lights around our acre plot and brought home a dog. The few times I've tried bringing it up, he doesn't want to discuss it and made it clear he never wanted to. Those figures still give me the chills, and the image of the three huddled together is very vivid 15 years later. They did a very good job of setting the scene for that story. I pictured it all very well, and I suppose it would be a very startling thing to see. Just kind of rocks your world, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to say how anyone would react in that situation. I guess makes it different too if you have a child, if you're trying to protect them. But I don't know. Just me thinking about it as an outsider, seeing three little goblins on the forest path behind my house. I don't know. I think I'd be curious and want to go back, but maybe they sensed something in those creatures that made it very clear that they were dangerous. But very interesting little story there. All right, so I thought I only had one Reddit story. That's what I said at the beginning of the show. But it turns out I have more. I didn't realize I had another one saved until I was looking for something to go out on. So, our last story is going to be from the Humanoid Encounters subreddit, and there are several interesting comments to read after it as well. It was posted by Angel Fox 1, and it's called Strange Creepy Little Man. When I was in my early 20s, I was driving home from work. It was cold out, and the roads were icy. I came up over a hill doing about 35 miles per hour. There was this tiny little troll-like man in the middle of the road. My car lights made his eyes gleam bright red. I slammed on my brakes, panicking, and ended up sliding into a 15-foot ditch on the side of the road, full of water. By the time I got out of the car, I was soaked. I was terrified to go back out on the road. The creepy little man had given me a horrible vibe, and I was terrified. About the time I finally climbed out of the ditch, holding branches from a tree, it had started to snow. I could see his little footprints in the snow. By the time I made it home an hour later and came back with my ex-husband, the footprints were gone. He said I hallucinated it. This was in the early 90s, so I had no cell phone. Has anyone else encountered a creepy little troll-like man? His face was wrinkled, and he had sharp teeth. He was dressed in a little coat and trousers with a scarf and a black hat. Now, I have the impulse, and I want to say and comment on how this goblin is adorably dressed in his little coat and trousers and scarf and hat. By the way, they do say in the comments that the hat was a pointed hat, like gnomes wear, only black. Anyway, even though I have the impulse to comment on how cute he sounds, I must acknowledge that he nearly caused the death of someone. Really, this poor person was put in a really dangerous situation. They crashed their car into a flooded ditch and then it started snowing and they had to walk an hour home wet in the snow. So, as cute as I think he sounds, that's not very nice. This story is quite similar to some of the ones we read in the previous video I did, reading Goblin Encounters from Reddit. Goblins seem to be found crossing dark, lonely roads quite often. Let's read some of the comments from this story. Headless Lady says, I assumed he was Fae. I was at a friend's house in the woods, and we were all sitting around in her backyard. I felt like someone was watching me, and I glanced up to see this little man. He was maybe a foot tall. He was crouched down at the base of a tree, dressed in what seemed like a brown wool suit. As I watched him, he just kind of faded out. It was freaky. I didn't sense any hostility from him, more curiosity. It was startling, but not scary. But from then on, my friend left offerings of cream and milk in the woods behind her house, just in case. Another comment from Planctus Pellegrin says, a friend of mine who lives in rural northwestern New Jersey said that she heard noise on her back porch. She thought maybe a squirrel got into the house somehow. I'm guessing this was a screened-in back porch. She went out to the back to see what it was, and there was a very small man, maybe only a foot tall, and he was dressed like a gnome, and he was covering his face like he was afraid of her. She was so shocked, but she walked to the door and opened it, and he ran out into the night. She was a New Jersey state trooper. She's not the kind of person who would make up a story, so I really believe her. Ever since that night, she became extremely interested in gnomes and trolls and elves, and in her house she had statues and knickknacks of them. She said that it was because she now knows they are real. So in the story we read about the goblin in the road, or the little troll-like man, the witness described it as being creepy and giving off a horrible vibe. In the first comment we read from Headless Lady, the person who saw the little being in the wool suit got a sense of curiosity from the creature. And then in the comment I just read, the little gnome seemed frightened to the person who saw it. Kind of interesting the wide range in which these little creatures are perceived and all the different emotional states people find them in or pick up off of them. Also, in response to that comment about the gnome sighting on the back porch, someone asked, you ever hear of the Nosferatu type thing, supposedly in the woods in Andover? I'm guessing they bring this up because the gnome comment mentioned New Jersey, and it seems Andover is a borough in New Jersey. But there was no further elaboration on this, and I have to say I'm quite disappointed in that because I'm very curious about a Nosferatu type thing, supposedly in the woods of Andover. I tried looking that up, but came back with nothing. So if anyone has any idea about what this person is talking about, please let me know. All right, let's read one more comment. Crimson Courtesan says, my husband and I were driving over a viaduct one night around 10:30 p.m. in November 2018. I was in the passenger seat and my husband was driving. There were other cars around us, but not heavy traffic. Anyway, I see this thing, which looks like a cross between a gnome and a dwarf, with long arms hanging well past his knees. He walked right in front of our car from the right, going to the left. I couldn't understand how and why we didn't hit it. I sat there shocked for a second, and then I saw my husband shoot up in his seat, looking in the rearview mirror, and he says, "What the fuck was that?" He starts telling me what he saw, exactly what I did, but he saw it directly in front of him. Then he saw it behind us, and the car behind us reacted to it as well, but they swerved to avoid it. I have no idea what it was. I didn't have any feelings, one way or the other. Well, other than being happy, my husband was there to see it too. He doesn't believe in pretty much anything weird or abnormal. He still has a hard time believing what we saw. The thing we saw was wearing a Robin Hood-style hat, just not as pointy and no feathers. It was brown, too. Its clothes looked dingy. It had on a maroon-colored vest and brown short pants. I didn't get a chance to look at its feet to see the shoes, or lack thereof. Oddly enough, this encounter was just submitted and posted to the Phantoms and Monsters blog we read from earlier, the story before this one. It's really wild to me that Crimson Courtesan's comments were posted 4 years ago to this Reddit thread, and then was posted to the Phantoms and Monsters blog as I'm recording this. It was posted July 2nd, and I'm recording this on July 4th. What a coincidence. Really, really strange to me, but very cool. And the post on the Phantoms and Monsters blog is pretty much word for word to their comments that I just read. The only details added were that the creature they saw was about 3 feet tall, very gruff and stubby looking, gnarly, thick features. And they also said that it was human-like. Interestingly, both this story and the original report of the goblin crossing the street and causing an accident took place in Michigan. So, be careful navigating the roads in Michigan. There might be more to worry about than deer and bad drivers. Well, those are all our goblin stories for the night. I've exhausted my supply for now, but at this rate, I'm bound to pile up a few more in the coming months. And if you've seen any goblins, do let me know. Thank you so much for joining me and for celebrating 2 years of making videos with me. I really and truly get so much joy out of doing it, and I'm just trying to refine it all the time, but I really just do because I love and enjoy, and just gives me an excuse to read about my favorite topics and interests at any given time. So, I'd like to play us out with a song from the 1977 animated Hobbit film, one of my favorites. I'll see you all next time. Good night.